Darkness has descended upon the city, and the creatures of the night have begun to stir. This is the time when the veil between the realms of the living and the dead is the thinnest, and all that is not what it appears to be. Like a lone sentinel, one candle flickers in the night, revealing all that lurks in the darkness. This is Ghost Chronicles, Book of Shadows. Welcome to the nightmare.
Good evening, everyone, and this is That Lone Candle Burning in the Night. Ron Kolick, your host tonight, along with my favorite witch from the West Coast, Marla Brooks.
Hello.
That's the sexiest voice you have.
Well, you know, just want to get on a good start.
Yeah, okay. Now, welcome to Ghost Chronicles. Before we're coming on, we were talking about the cycles, which are about to come out at the same time, the 17-year cycle and the 13-year-old cycle, and it's going to be in the South. And I wonder if my guest is going to hear that amazing tune. So joining us tonight is paranormalist and Vince Wilson. Vince, you there?
Yes, hello. Thank you for having me on.
Yeah, do you have cicadas down there?
Not right now. Occasionally. They're not in season at the time, but yeah, we do get cicadas down here occasionally.
Yeah, because they're coming out the same and hell of a party, so yeah. Anyways, Betts, I believe I met you probably about 20 years ago, if that, and you did an event with Jeff Belanger and Gettysburg called Ghostology, and Maureen and I were down there for
Oh, I remember that. That was quite a while back, yeah.
Yeah, that was the first time actually heard of you, quite frankly, but, you know, I was pretty new to the paranormal back then anyways, but yeah, so welcome aboard, and thanks for joining us today.
Thank you. Yeah, it was a pleasure being here. Yeah, a lot has changed over the past 20 years or so for me.
I would think.
Yeah. Yep. Back then, there was no TV shows, really, not as many as there are today. You know, that has waned here and there quite a bit, you know. So, yeah, it's a lot has changed for me, and I think in regards to paranormal and ghost hunting and paranormal research, et cetera, et cetera.
I've got a question, because some people might not know.
Right off the bat, look at you.
Ta-da. but people may not know what a paranormalist is.
Okay, wait a minute, Molly. If you're going to steal all my questions before I get to say them, then you're in trouble.
That's okay. 40 wishes. I mean, yeah, 40 wishes.
That was the next words out of my mouth. So, yes, carry on.
You think alike. We're going to drive him crazy. You know that,
which is
right?
What, you know, yeah, great minds run in the same gutter. I understand. All right, carry on. Carry on. Ask your question.
So what is a paranormalist?
Well, a couple of things about me. I was I started off as a ghost hunter. I read a lot of books. I did a lot of research, and I started considering myself a paranormal investigator, although admittingly, a lot of people consider that interchangeable. I did get certified as a parapsychologist at the American Institute of Parapsychology, which was actually run by an actual parapsychologist, not ghost hunters calling themselves parapsychologists. Let's make that clear. There is a difference. A paranormalist is a person who takes aspects of the paranormal and supernatural, and folklore and mythology, and incorporates that into something for entertainment value. So that's where I am today. Truth be told, I'm very critical of modern ghost hunting and paranormal research. I think it's no one knows what they're doing anymore, and I think the biggest problem with it is there's no experts, and I think they have this. Let me elaborate. I have a question for you guys.
Mm-hmm.
All right, I know what your answer is going to be already. I could write it on a piece of paper right now.
I doubt it. You might be an illusionist, but you're not going to know this one.
Oh, but he's a mentalist.
So why are there no experts in a paranormal?
There are experts in the paranormal.
Oh, but why do they? Every time you go to a conference, every time you go to a convention of ghost hunters, but yeah,
see, that's where you set astray, my friend. It's
been, yeah.
Paranormal not running to conferences selling something. They are doing research. My previous co-host from my last show, Steve UK, is one of the top parapsychologists in the UK and is founder of Parascience. And he spends his time investigating and developing course notes and so forth for the SPR and other organizations. So there are serious people out there. Cal Cooper, who's doing quite a bit of work at University of Nottingham, is doing the same thing. And of course, you have Lloyd Arbery.
Yeah,
Lloyd is probably the one guy in the U.S. England, I think they take it a little bit more seriously, although they do have their ghost hunters too. But for most part, if you go to a ghost hunt, something advertised as a ghost hunting, and this wasn't always the case, but in the past 15 years or so, or even the past 20 years or so, it's become more of the case. When you go to a ghost hunting conference, you know, or a paranormal conference, you'll hear people say there's no experts in the paranormal. And when you ask them why there's no experts, they'll say, well, you can't be an expert in something that you can't prove exists, or there's no, you know, et cetera, et cetera. I'm like, well,
so why are you running around trying to?
Well, there, you can have experts on things that don't exist. You know, you have experts. Mm-hmm. You if you know that European explorers went to Africa and misidentified a rhinoceros and came back and said they call them unicorns, you know, and they sort of evolved into a horse with a singular horn on its forehead and a goat's tail, for example, and that they would spare virgins but kill men and with their horns by impaling them in the trees. This is all folklore mythology on unicorns, and you would have an above average understanding on unicorns, a thing that doesn't exist technically. But that would make you an expert on that, because an expert is someone with an above average understanding who hopefully has published or written or documented, you know, some kind of paper or book on the topic. So that would make them an expert, although there are certainly authors of books on ghosts that are not experts as well.
Ron, great. Sorry, Ron, you're going to get mad, but how many people, let's say there's 100 people in a room that say that they're ghost hunters. Mm-hmm. How many are real and how many are...
What do you mean by real? I mean, you have to define what a ghost hunter is.
No. They just stick a label on themselves. They don't do any research.
There are people that call themselves parapsychologists.
That too. But
they have no degree. I have no studying or anything, really.
No, things have changed. You know, they want to be on TV. That's the goal, is to be on TV.
Yeah, the motivation. Yep.
Yeah. So
yeah, I mean, off of the thrill of it.
But that's why there's so many not doing so well anymore, because they came over these what do you call it, and then it took away a credibility for the people that were really doing it. That's what
The problem is, it's also not harmless. All right, and the reason I say it's not harmless, so they, you know, some might argue, like, what's the harm? Well, the harm is this: that these ghost hunting groups put a post out on Facebook saying, "Hey, we need to put a team together," and it's like their friends and their cousins and some strangers they found on social media. And now they're investigating someone's house, you know, a home that occasionally has children in it, and that is the problem. Like, if you are, if you are ghost hunting and you're going into people's homes and looking for ghosts, you are problematic. You do not have the 100% of ghost hunters, 100% of ghost hunters going into people's private homes should not be doing that. If you have ghost hunting or paranormal investigator and that sort of thing, you should not be going into private homes ever. You know,
I kind of disagree with you.
Yeah, well, there's no credibility. There's no licensing. There's no credentials.
But there's no credentials or anything else from mediums to do, you know, to affect people's lives or what they tell other people's.
Well, there's mediums that have, you know, a rental space at a mall, you know, or they're a psychic neon sign where you go to them and they're their business and they have, and they might have an LLC or business license to do tarot cards. And there's a medium that goes, who's also in the same thing I'm saying, going to someone's private home where there's children occasionally, unlicensed, unsupervised, you know, with no credentials, going into someone's home. Emphasis on the fact that some of these people have children, which makes it worse, but still bad even if they don't, you know.
Profile or something. You know, it's not true. I mean, you go to the SBR. The SBR, you know, Steve has just rewritten the guidance notes for them, for their investigators. And the old ones, you know, they used to sit in the bedroom with the child while he was sleeping. They had other things that they used to do at that time. And those have changed over the years. You know, but there are teams that are not going out there looking for ghosts. They're going out to try to understand what is happening, experience these people are having, and try to explain it from. That's the teams that are doing serious work. But the ones that are going in there and they have demons in the house don't know what the hell they're doing half the time. And so,
and they can cause havoc. Like
they can cause havoc. So I'm not getting wrong with that. But you can't, I mean, you've been painting, since you got on the air, you've been painting everybody in a very bad light. And it's not true. There are doing serious work in the paranormal.
Yeah.
And, you know, we shouldn't forget that by doing what you're doing is actually, you know, casting aspersions on all these other people that are trying to do serious work out there.
Well, how do you prove they're doing serious work? That's the thing.
Most of them have credentials. They're parapsychologists that studied and very thing and
Laurie, papers. So there's a difference. So you got sidetracked because I said ghost hunters. I said 100% of ghost hunters.
Steve calls himself a ghost hunter. Steve calls himself a ghost hunter. It's just a title.
He's also a parapsychologist, but
he doesn't have a parapsychology degree. He's not a doctor, but he is probably one of the most. That's the other thing. The word parapsychology, if you look up the definition of it, it's a very broad definition. It's not from a specific. Other words, you don't have to go and come out with a specific degree to become a parapsychologist.
That's because the degree was eliminated in the United States. There, Dwight Auerbach has a degree in parapsychology. He actually has an actual degree in it
from the Rhine.
And people with degrees like Lloyd can certify new parapsychologists, since there isn't a degree anymore, but they do certification programs.
Exactly. You know? That's the other thing. There's so many, as you mentioned before, that are just calling themselves parapsychology because they got some certificate. I mean, there were people, you know, like the guy that was transplanting goat testicles on people called himself a doctor because he went to some doctor mill and got himself a diploma when he really had no training or certification at all. But
just described those ghost hunters because the problem there needs to be so to be clear, you could ghost hunt and paranormal investigate and look into these things however you want to with any sort of belief system, ideas or methodology, because, you know, we don't know what works, et cetera, et cetera. That's fair. No one's saying that you should have a definitive criteria for the way you investigate or whatnot, you know. But there should be some kind of standardization organization to prevent bad people or bad actors going into people's homes once again. Mm-hmm. An amateur ghost hunting team that has assembled itself from social media or their friends or family that have whose entire experience in how to do this and their entire education comes from TV shows, and there's thousands of teams out there around the world like that. You know, okay. I just described probably 90% of ghost hunting groups. You know, and there's exceptions, sure. But for the most part,
yeah, what I'm gonna say is I'm not disagreeing you in any bit at all. I mean, I seriously agree with you. But that's what irritated me on it. It's just not exactly true that it's all groups. It's just the majority, perhaps.
The vast majority, yes.
I mean, yeah, the SPR, the Society for Psycho Research, the oldest one in the world, in the UK, produces the guidance notes, which is a set of notes that use for investigating, you know, and there are other organizations that have similar type, you know, guidance, as you want to call it. I mean, Harry Price was the first to set that's the type of thing. Unfortunately, you have Begins who come out with a book, and that all of a sudden how to ghost hunt, and that becomes the guidance notes for many of these groups that are out there are the ghost hunter the same way. I mean, it's that's the way it is.
People just will listen. If somebody writes a book, it must be true, just like Wikipedia.
Yeah, give me a break.
And that's the sad part of it.
Yeah. I've written three books on it, but I don't claim to be the authority on it either. The, I'm saying that there should be background checks. I think every ghost hunter should do a background,
certification
check.
By the state.
Certification. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. They should be checked to see if they're on some kind of list, for example, before they, mm-hmm. and if you think I'm, if the worst case scenario, why I keep saying children and ghost hunters, if this is a thing that has happened in the past, there have been cases in which terrible, awful people,
can you give me any
not without giving out names, and I don't want to. I knew a paranormal investigator whose husband was arrested for exactly what I'm hinting at, and he was a paranormal investigator, a ghost hunter who went into homes and houses and things like that. And
he can call himself a ghost hunter.
Yeah. Because anyone can call themselves a ghost hunter, you know. And so it would be a simple act to, just do a $10 background check on people through most websites and that sort of thing. Like if you join a ghost hunting group, maybe you give you give $10 to the group team leader. Everyone agrees to have their background checked. You know, they've mm-hmm. given their telephone number and information so they can, go on one of these websites or provide them with a background check or something like that. But I don't think anyone's doing that. As far as I know.
I know it's a big thing in the U.S. that, you know, for instance, even our church has it now. I forget what it's called, but they have to file. They have to come in and fill out the application, and it goes to all the police departments. And before you can volunteer or do anything at the church, you have to go through this check. So it is being done in other places. But I agree with you. I mean, in the UK, for instance, they have certain laws on mediums, where mediums can have to be not certified, but they can only do certain things or whatever. It's very stringent, and there are consequences. We need that same type of thing here in the U.S. I agree with you 100% on that.
Yep. It's something. I apologize if I sounded really aggressive on that, but it's just something I feel strongly about. Yeah. There's too many of these amateur groups out there. There was a team at a hotel I was at recently. I was introduced to this group of paranormal investigators. They said, I'd like to, the hotel manager was like, I'd like to introduce you to Vince Wilson. He's our resident paranormal expert, et cetera, et cetera. And I just asked the guy, matter of fact, I said, oh, and he had thousands of dollars worth of equipment just laying around this room, video cameras, and EMF detectors, and infrared cameras, and things like that, just laying around. And I was impressed by the level of equipment he had. So I asked, so my question was, what sort of books have you read on paranormal investigation? This is the team leader, mind you, like, you know, your typical look, you know, beard, like long beard, you know, black baseball cap, tactical pants, like your stereotype for a ghost hunter. Right. And he goes, I don't read a lot of books. I haven't read any books on it, to be honest with you. I just watch the TV shows. That was his answer. That was a legitimate answer. You know, so.
I mean, the interesting side about it is you talked about that and all the equipment, and he hasn't read any books. I wonder if he read the instruction manual for his FLIR camera, or even took the that you can get free with it when you go. I just
read enough to put the batteries inside of it. Yeah.
Yeah. See, that's pretty much what a lot of these groups do. They don't understand the equipment, and the same with the equipment itself. I mean, you look at some of the equipment that you get. I mean, really, that there's no calibration in it. There's no they give you no instructions on how to calibrate, how to test it, how to do anything, what the range is, anything like that. You get absolutely nothing with the equipment that you get nowadays. And so I don't know, but it was used on TV, so it's good.
A lot of people are using those apps on their telephone. That's
okay.
To look at modern liquid ghost hunting technology, for example, all right, they're still using voice recorders they buy on eBay, even though we have the best voice recorders in the world, which are on our phones. Now, I'm not talking about the EMF detector apps and stuff like that. They're all awful. I'm talking about voice recorders and a simple voice recording app. Your phone has your modern phones have some of the most advanced microphones in the world, you know? So why go on eBay, find an out of date digital voice recorder that no real person uses anymore?
Which was garbage at the time. It's still garbage now.
Mm-hmm. It's garbage now, exactly. Or a laptop or a tablet or a Chromebook all these devices have superior microphones. In fact, you can get a Chromebook for $150 at Walmart, hook a USB microphone up to it, and have a much better audio recording system with almost infinite storage space because of the cloud than you would with any of these digital recorders. The EMF detectors, most people use K2 meters, which are not true EMF detectors. They're actually frequency differential devices that sense all the most electromagnetic spectrum within EMF or EMR. So they will pick up a garage door opener down the street, and that's what you're actually detecting, not a ghost. You know, and also EMF detectors don't detect ghosts. They detect,
we don't even know what a ghost is.
The theory is this: as the parapsychologists who originally used EMF detectors propagated, all right, you're looking for changes in the atmospheric conditions, environmental conditions, and electromagnetic fields are part of that. So the theory is this: there's a invisible thing, ghost or whatever, moves to the environment, changes existing electromagnetic fields. So you had to do base readings over a course of hours first, and then you would detect those differentials as the invisible thing, whatever that is, entity or whatnot, moves through the environment. So, and you would do that once again over a course of hours or days, using a grid or a cubic grid pattern, format, like you do in archaeological digs and that sort of thing, throughout the environment to detect these movements through that environment, which nobody does because it's been forgotten. They just use electromagnetic field detectors like their Egon's PKE meter from Ghostbusters. By the way, saw Ghostbusters Frozen Empire last night. Awesome freaking movie. You should definitely
Yes,
it was. I got invited to a special sneak preview yesterday.
Oh, very cool. Nice. That's very cool. Yeah. I can't wait to see it.
Yeah.
We are coming out on the break, unfortunately. But I do want to mention that MF meters out there, they're on the expensive side, of course, but they can actually tell you the radio. See, you need the three dimensions, frequency, amplitude, and what the hell are the other ones? I can't remember. But most people don't know that the federal government actually regulates all radio frequencies. So they have and things available to tell you which these are. And if you are picking up a frequency, you can determine whether it is, you know, from a, you know, a radio station or a transport or whatever. We do have to take a break, unfortunately. So we'll come back and we'll talk a little bit about Vince when we come back. Anyways, you're listening to Ghost Chronicles, Book of Shadows, with Marla Brooks and Ron Kolick right here, and our special guest, Vince Wilson, right here on TojiNet, brought to you by Circles of Wisdom, 286 Merrimack Street, Methuen, Massachusetts, the Glant Messier Family Law Group, 15 High Street, North Andover, Massachusetts, and our very good friends on Ghost Chronicles Radio on Patreon. Become a member, and you get access to exclusive things like the new photograph that, quite an interesting photograph that Steve took up at Sphericos one year that we haven't been able to figure out, and we have got Steve purchase some new state-of-the-art software on it, and still software thing is. So check it out in the Patreon in the upcoming months. But anyways, we'll be right back with the following messages right here on TojiNet.
Do you have a paranormal event, book, or something else you want people to know about? Then why not advertise it on Ghost Chronicles Radio? With over 150,000 downloads a month, get your message out to an audience that's interested in the subject. We have a plan at a cost that fits your needs. For more information, contact Ron Kolick at anyghostproject@comcast.net or call 978-455-6678.
Located in Illinois, there lies a sleepy little town where nothing is a common occurrence.
You going to that party in town tonight?
Heck yeah! I only turned 18 once.
That is until the night of celebration.
Where the hell is she? Oh, no. No, 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 Jessica! What's happening?
From the creators of Shadowhunters, Bite Me, comes a tale of primal terror and grindcore mayhem. Shadowhunters, kill Jessica, kill!
Can you hear me? My name is Harry Price. I am speaking to you via the medium of the Ghost Box. Many of you will know I carried out the first live radio broadcast from Haunted House way back in 1936 for the BBC. Now, thanks to the wonders of modern technology, I am still able to keep abreast of 21st century ghost hunting by listening to Ghost Chronicles International on TogiNet, Para-X Radio, The Ghost Channel, and even on something called a podcast. Two splendid chaps host it. One is an American who calls himself New England's own Van Helsing, although I have discovered his real name is Ron Kolek. The other is Stephen Parsons, and he's a paranormal scientist. Well, mustache, I'm required elsewhere on something called a K2. But don't forget, I'll be listening in every Tuesday from 8 o'clock in Great Britain and 3 o'clock on the American Eastern Seaboard. I trust you will join me there.
Come on.
And welcome back to Ghost Chronicles, the Book of Shadows, with Ron Kolick, me, Marla Brooks, and our guest, Vince Wilson. All right, Juan, where we pick up?
We're not back until the Van Helsing music plays. That's just a hint.
Yeah.
So, carry on.
Carried. Where'd we leave off before the break?
So, and who has the term paranormalist? So I'm interested. What's the difference between like a paranormalist and then like what my friend Vlad says, a bizarre magic? Because you're a magician as well, correct?
Yeah, the paranormalist is someone who uses knowledge of the paranormal and supernatural, folklore, myth, and legend, in order to incorporate that to a theatrical storytelling magical atmosphere. Mm-hmm. You know, so I might incorporate in my show aspects of legends on vampires definitely ghosts and hauntings. I do a lot of ghosts and hauntings, things like that. You know, the sympathetic magic, you know, for example, you know, things on those lines, you know, the utilizing information, I incorporate some of that knowledge. I also do ghost tours, so it all kind of relates in that way, but also psychic phenomenon and things along those lines, you know.
Our friend Steve Gibson does the seance, that is his big deal there, and so work on more of the he's done it for a couple of times. So you know, that's an intriguing part. If you ever come up this way, let me know, because I'm sure I can for sure. That's an intriguing. I never knew that. That sounds really. So I got to ask you, what came first, the ghost hunting or the magic? I mean, were you always interested in magic, or were you interested in ghost hunting first, or how did that work out?
Oh my gosh, I guess technically both. So I just turned 50 back in January. So I grew up on shows like Ripley's Believe It or Not and In Search of with Leonard Nimoy. I grew up in the late 70s, when the Amityville Horror was a big thing, and all those things were very significant influences on me in regards to, you know, what I believed in things. I also grew up with David Copperfield, Harry Blackstone Jr., and not to mention Doug Henning and things along those lines. So these things were big influences on me for sure. I was doing ghost tours and seances in the early 2000s, around the same time I was getting into the paranormal. So I understood, and I tried to keep those separate as best I could. So these are ghost tours and these are seances. And I did two kinds of seances. One was the psychological seance, which most people would say is a real seance. Skeptics call it psychological, and so do magicians, because they say that it's the actual imagination, of course, that is causing you to believe that ghosts are in the room, and as opposed to actually there's ghosts in the room. Then there's the theatrical seance, where things absolutely happen every time because you're using gimmicks and magic tricks and things like that to make those things happen. You have to make that difference clear. Like if I'm doing a seance for if I'm doing a real seance, I do not incorporate tricks, threads, or anything like that. And it's fairly obvious if you ever attended those. One's going to feel like you're at the Magic Castle in Los Angeles. The other one's going to feel like you're in a what you believe a true seance to be. You know, so I'm trying to make sure that I make those differences clear, because I'm not trying to fool people or fake them out or anything like that. There's psychological, there's theatrical. There's a big difference. I started doing those in the early 2000s, while at the same time I started doing the paranormal stuff. And a lot of those things got me on, all my TV credits, Discovery Channel, Travel Channel, Destination America, Travel Channel twice, National Geographic, every local TV station in Baltimore. I realized recently, as a matter of fact, I've been over almost 300 podcasts, radio shows, and things like that in the past 20 years.
God bless you.
Yeah. So, but yeah, I am passionate about it. That's why I get I'm passionate about these things and also people's safety. That's why I get so upset about the home investigation aspect. It's like, don't go in people's homes. You know, it's just like, you know, investigate haunted prisons all you want. Go to every abandoned insane asylum you want to. Go to the Winchester Mystery Mansion. Go to Alcatraz, Waverly Hills. I've been to Waverly Hills myself 3 times. Go to those places. There's plenty of places like that. Haunted inns, beds and breakfasts, you know, hotels, things like that. But, you know, if you're not doing background, to put a pin in it so we can move on to other stuff. If you don't, without background checks and things like that, don't go in people's homes. You know, that's my opinion.
Yeah.
So, yep.
I can see the harm in it, but so you were so you were about the same time you were both paranormal investigator and a magician.
Yep.
So when you were paranormal investigating, was your magic a tool in your investigation? Not meaning that you were able to determine fraud with it, in other words, for instance.
Oh, yeah. So, you know, our team, when I had a team back in the day, regularly encountered fraud. There was soon after the TV shows started coming out. There was more cases of people faking things in order to get on said TV shows. They were mm-hmm. hoping that the right paranormal investigator team with the right connections would come along and certify them haunted. You know, in fact, I started getting requests from people saying, "Can you write a document saying that our place is haunted?" That's the thing that actually happened. You know, and you know the thing is. I like to think of myself as optimistically skeptical, you know, where I want to believe in ghosts and hauntings. In fact, I do believe in something, but I've also acknowledged the fact that these phenomena technically are rare. If they were not rare, then we would have proved an existence of hauntings by now. It's rarer than people think they are. And it's not like movies and TV shows where, like in Poltergeist, where things are flying around and records are playing by themselves and things along those lines. It's subtle and simple. It might be emotions as opposed to being influenced, as opposed to actual, poltergeist activity and things like that. And then there's all sorts of different aspects of categories and, types and things along those lines that people forget about, you know, and a lot of the amateurs out there mix these terminologies up or don't understand that they're blending faith with science, and it doesn't really work out that way most of the time very well. It can be convoluted sometimes with all the different ideas and options out there.
Do you ever work with a medium on your investigations?
Well, personally, I'm a double extra large myself. Yes, I've worked with mediums on investigations before. Yes. And I also like to point out that, remember, when you work with a medium or a psychic, what they're feeling is also filtered through that person's own biases and prejudices, you know. Mm-hmm. So, mm-hmm. you know, because yeah. they could
as
feel,
everything we yeah. see, heal, yeah. fear is.
Yep, exactly. So, a outside of the sort of transcendental mediumship or the mediums of old that used to be literally possessed by ghosts and things like that. What you're getting is filtered information. You know, there. I remember once I was in the battlefield of Gettysburg, and the there was a psychic on the team, and it was in the middle of summer, so I went into my trunk and I had some different different types of spray for bugs. I had off without DEET in it because some people are allergic to that. I was back in the day, I was over prepared for everything. I used to have a foldable gazebo I would bring out with us so we could have a cover, you know, when we're outdoors. That's right. So and we had I had a rechargeable battery backup that we could plug AC devices into, all kinds of stuff.
Tactical.
So yeah. Oh yeah, we definitely had food and snacks and that sort of thing. And we were out in the battlefield of Gettysburg, and I asked everyone, I said, would you like some off? Right? So everyone got this. They all got off on them, except for the psychic for some reason. I said, I have DEET free if you're allergic. And she says, no, I just don't want any of it. So it smells bad is what her answer was. So we go out in the battlefield. Now, keep in mind, we have about 15 people with us. Everyone except for one person in this, it is very wide open battlefield, has DEET on them. We are not being bothered by mosquitoes. Suddenly you see a black cloud forming over this psychic. And it's not like a black cloud of psychic energy. This is a swarm of mosquitoes because she's the only one, because mosquitoes are, if you don't know, are drawn to carbon dioxide, which we can't breathe out. That's how they home in on living mammals and things like that. So a black cloud is literally swarming over. And suddenly she goes, the spirits are telling me we should leave here immediately.
Uh-huh. Yeah. I can see how, you know, that a training in magic could help in investigating. But, you know, I have my qualms about it too, like, you know, people like Randy who use the magic to actually, how can you say this, but he's actually
belittle everybody else.
Yeah, so what he's trying he's doing what he's trying to get rid of, basically. I mean, there was a university, and I forget where it was, some professor was able to finally set up a parapsychology department up there, and he started working on spoon bending. Mm-hmm. And he was, you know, we're running this department. He hadn't had much luck at all with it. And then one day, two men came in, and they were quite astonishing. They were able to do a lot of this and everything. And Randy kept saying, you know, be careful, you know, it's like all this and everything. Well, the whole gist of it was that these guys and everything, but they were actually plants from Randy into the university. Yeah. The guy lost his funding and everything else. So people trying to do serious research are attacked by people who their own personal beliefs don't believe. So everybody else must be frauds or whatever. Actually destroying people that are trying to do research. So that's the part of, you know, that I don't like, where you have skeptics that are actually doing the reverse of what they should be doing. And that is, you know, trying to fraud, if that's what they think, a fraud, so trying to do it. So, I mean,
yeah, skeptics can be that, dogmatic too. Yes. For
yeah.
Sure. Yeah.
Proper way of doing things?
Well, you like I said, I try to be optimistically skeptical, believing in the possibility of things. I also acknowledge the fact there's fraud and fakery and or delusions or misinformation. Like there could be infrasonic sound nearby that's causing hallucinations. There could be creaky floorboards in an old house. There could be kids literally faking things because they want more attention from their parents. You know, I've encountered that before, you know. And there, among so many other things. And then there's those rare cases when there's something that you can't explain. I think it's important to differentiate the paranormal and the supernatural as well. The paranormal is, you know, we live in a scientific universe that's governed by laws, regardless of where that comes from. Did God do it? Well, he did it for a reason. There's a design that makes sense. There's rules and science. So that's the paranormal. It's like we don't know now, but maybe we will day when we will know one day when we figure it out. The supernatural is, doesn't matter, I believe, and that's enough. These things don't overlap sometimes, but sometimes they also don't go well together. You know, if ghosts are souls trapped on Earth with unfinished business, then what's the point in using an EMF detector? Because you're not picking up a soul. That's belief. That's theology. That is outside the realm of human understanding. And it's pointless to try to investigate it. If that's what you think ghosts are, souls with unfinished business. Now, if you think they're energy, that's something different. That's the paranormal. Right. You know, the previous is supernatural. The paranormal is memory.
But everything gets built through, as you mentioned earlier, through our own minds. Bias. I mean, I had a Baptist ghost hunting group on the show, but they weren't a ghost hunting group. They were a demon hunting because they believed that when a person died, he even went to heaven or hell. So there were no ghosts on the planet. They must be demons. So that's what he was looking for. So that was filtered through his religion. And that's how he was looking at things. And I think that's the way we all do. And unfortunately, the paranormal is a personal experience. It's what people have witnessed, saw, smelled, whatever they've seen all through history. There have been incidents, ghosts or whatever, but it's what they saw or what they believe they saw. And you can't discount those experiences. That's what they believed in. It's very difficult.
And that's why I have a very, very important message for your listeners. You should absolutely use Ouija boards 100% of the time. You should have a Ouija board on your team. A Ouija board, one of your team members brings it with you every single time. Make sure it's packed in your ghost hunting package. And always bring Ouija boards with you. They are fun, wonderful tools for paranormal investigation.
That's
and
great,
research.
Vince, because I'm going to use this advertisement for the show now.
the Ouija board, of course, invented in my hometown of Baltimore City, in the late 1800s, for the purpose of spirit communication. Most of the 20th century, it was used as a date night game. It was invented by the Baltimore Talking Board Company with Elijah Bond and Emmanuel Fold and their families. And there's a great gravestone at Greenmount Cemetery in Baltimore where Elijah Bond is buried and has a Ouija board carved in the back of it. It was actually designed by a friend of mine. And the Ouija
board.
What's that?
Who is that? Who's your friend?
Let me send a quick message out. I will name him in a second. I think he's actually
okay. Because is that if that's the new one, then I believe that Bob Murch had a lot to do with the creation.
Absolutely correct. Yes, you're absolutely correct.
Okay,
Murch is the one who put it together. Made sure
because
that
because we
was...
actually helped raise funds for that as well. So yeah.
Okay. But it was. Give me just a second.
That's all right. You can if he pops in, you can.
Calvin von Crush is Calvin von Crush is actually the designer of the Ouija board, the Ouija board grave zone. Yeah. So anyway, what I wanted to say about the Ouija board was it ties into what really influences people. There is something that has a greater influence on the human consciousness than your faith and school, than your parents, than your friends and family, than the media. You know what that is? It's an outside influence. It's not. Mm-hmm. It is pop culture. And pop culture has a greater influence on us than anything else. What we think we know about heaven and hell mostly doesn't come from the Bible, for example. It comes from or other religious texts, many other religions in the world. It comes from Paradise Lost and Dante's Inferno, part of the Divine Comedy, by Dante Alighieri. We believe that vampires are killed by sunlight, not because of some ancient tradition, and it's certainly been around for thousands of years, but because of a movie that came in 1922 called Nosferatu. Werewolves are killed by what kills a werewolf? Silver bullets. That's right. That came from the Wolfman, 1940. Not once again, not some ancient tradition. So, what The Ouija board was mostly harmless. In fact, it was on an episode of I Love Lucy, for goodness sake.
That was a good episode.
Yes, it was. And it was it was mostly harmless until the 1970s. Now, this is around when the Satanic Panic started and things like that. So What ruined the reputation of the Ouija board? Was it the teenagers going to the graveyard at night? Did they draw a pentagram in blood by lighting candles nearby and playing Black Sabbath in the background? And suddenly a vortex of fire sucked the teens down into the ninth circle of perdition? Is that what happened? Was it maybe at the Parker Brothers manufacturing plant, there's a coven of witches cursing every board as it comes down the assembly line next to Chutes and Ladders and Candyland? Is that what makes the Ouija board inherently evil? No. It was a movie came out in 1973 called The Exorcist. That movie tarnished and ruined the reputation of the Ouija board for modern audiences forever because of the scene in the movie where the little girl Reagan talks to Captain Howdy. In fact, the font for the Ouija board, if you were to download it online, is called Captain Howdy for that reason. And that is what ruined the reputation of the Ouija board, a harmless piece of cardboard and plastic. Now, and people, of course, will say, but Vince, I had a bad experience with a Ouija board when I was a kid.
Yes, you did.
This thing happened to me. Now, my question to them is, what if you didn't have the Ouija board? What if you had a pendulum and a piece of paper? What if you had a voice recorder, the EMF detector? Are you 1,000% positive that the same thing wouldn't have happened regardless if you had a Ouija board or not? And you can't be, because you had the Ouija board at that moment. You know, so many stories of things, of people, things happening to them. I've heard stories from ghost hunters like, I was in this house and I got bit. Look, there's teeth marks on my skin. They'll pull their shirt up and there'll be claw marks or teeth marks or something like that. It must have been a demon. I was like, well, I guess you're not going back in there. And it's like, oh, of course you're going back in there. But if you mentioned a Ouija board, now they're scared for some reason. It makes no sense.
Yeah, there are places that won't even allow them in their paranormal ghost hunting meccas.
Yeah, it's like the Ouija board is a piece of cardboard with letters and numbers on it. It's not inherently evil. It is a tool. It has more, I would argue that EMF detectors. Actually. Yeah, what's that?
It's a game, actually.
It's a game, yeah. I would argue that a EVP experiment with a voice recorder is more dangerous than a Ouija board, because when most people start their EVP experiment, they always start with these words, is anyone here? which is what you shouldn't be saying if you studied seances. You always want to be a specific, is the previous owner of the house here, if you don't know a name. Better if you know the name, of course, but you never say, is anyone here? Because that opens you up to anything.
I have to tell you a story. I got called in by my parish priest one time because I was going to do a presentation. He did a background check on me, and he found my website and all this stuff. So we spent 2 hours talking. Anyways, he asked me a lot of questions, what I've thought of a medium, and all that stuff. And he asked me, what about Ouija boards? And I says, oh, I got a collection of those. And then I said, you do know they're just a game, right?
But what about Zuzo? You know, it's not the board, it's the devil coming through.
Pazuzu, is that what you said?
Yeah.
Zuzu.
Yep. Pazuzu, yeah. Assyrian wind spirit, which started about 3,000 years ago. It was a daemon, not a demon, technically, by definition, which is a spirit that exists between the above and below, basically, or earth and the heaven or a celestial plane, because this predates Christianity. Mothers would actually hang reliefs. Now, if you've actually seen the movie or looked up Pazuzu is a horrific looking thing. It's it actually looks sort of like an angel demon. It has wings, feathered wings. Four of them, actually, two in the top and two below on its back. Eight angels didn't exist as a concept at the time, as we know them. In fact, most angelic references had claws and animal faces in those time periods. In fact, Pazuzu also had a lion's face, claws on his hands, talons on his feet. and a snake.
Unfortunately, the Suzuzu at the station is telling me we've run out of time, so I don't want to face his talons and claws, so I have to wrap it up. Okay. So anyways, you've been listening to Ghost Chronicles, Book of Shadows, right here on TojiNet, and our special guest has been Vince Wilson. Now, Vince, if people want to find out more about you, how can they?
Well, if you want to know about my ghosty stuff, which is probably what most of your listeners are into, go to ghosttech.com. You know, you can go to that's where you can download my book or buy my book on how to. It's called Ultimate Ghost Tech, which talks about ghost hunting technology and the proper.
Where's
use
the other
of
site,
it.
Vince? We're going.
VinceWilsonMagic.com. Vince Wilson Magic. If you want to find out like what I'm, the paranormalist aspect. Yep.
All right. Thanks an awful lot, Vince. It's been great. It's been an interesting show.
Yeah,
I appreciate your time. Yep.
No problem.
Have a good night now.
You too.
Everyone, good night. God bless.
Good night.
Ghoulies to ghosties, long-leggedy beasties, and things that go bump in the night. Deliver us, good Lord.